Okay, it is time to start. So Rhyme Tovim, Erev Tov, Boker Tov, still in California. It's still only 11:15. So Bakasha, Lori, we're going to start now. Two parts on the Seder, woman at the Seder. So a pleasure to have you back. And okay, let's get started.
Thank you so much, Rav Jay. Thank you, all of you, for joining us here today. For me, it's tonight. I'm really looking forward to the topic. The Pesach is one of my, the Lilith Seder is one of my favorite things, and teaching about Lilith Seder and Pesach is also one of my favorite things. Actually, when I was trying to think about how to start tonight, the image that came into my mind was this a TV commercial for when I was a child. I don't know if do people even use TVs anymore? It's not on the computer, right? But back in the days before prestige TV, we had to watch commercials, right, to be able to watch our TV programs. And a very popular one was, there was a fast food chain called Wendy's. And in this fast food chain called Wendy's, wasn't a kosher chain. It had a, there was an old elderly woman who was like driving a car or arriving at the restaurant, and they would give her, and it wasn't Wendy's, and she would order I'm trying to remember this right. She would like order a hamburger, and they'd give her something that was like mostly like bun and salad and ketchup, and she'd open it up, and the famous catch line was, "Where's the beef?" And the answer was, if you really wanted the beef, the place you had to go was Wendy's. Is this ringing a bell for anybody? Well, if it's not, I apologize. But the idea was that the thing that you were looking for when you wanted to eat a hamburger was the beef. And in a certain way, that is that's the right background for thinking about Lilith Seder, because we have a tremendous amount that is going on at Lilith Seder, which is extremely meaningful, but there's this profound way in which, you know, we come to Lilith Seder and where's the beef? Thanks for the bell ring comment. Where's the beef? We don't have Korban Pesach. And in some very, you know, in some very fundamental way, matzah, you know, was like your hamburger bun. You know, it was a soft matzah that could be kind of bent. That's why the language of korech is, you know, to like roll something up. It was like a sandwich roll almost. You had your matzah. You had your maror, which was, you know, like your vegetable, you know, the salad represented that kind of thing. But you had the charoset, giving things a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a pickly, sour kind of flair. And that was all centered around the beef or the meat or the Korban Pesach, which we don't have any longer, at least at this stage. And I think it's only appropriate to start a discussion of women at the Seder by, I don't know what's politically correct or not. I have to stop looking at the chat because it distracts me every time, but keep it going. In Bezrat Hashem, at the end this evening, we'll enjoy looking at your comments and questions, which are always a great pleasure. So I still think it's really important to start our discussion of the Seder, including women at the Seder, by looking a little bit at Korban Pesach, both in the hopes that the beef is going to be lav dafka the beef, right? The lamb, that the Korban will be restored someday, perhaps, and we'll actually be able to reintroduce that into the Seder. And also because the fact of the matter is, because it's so central to the Seder proceedings, we can already start to get the flavor of how women are fitting into the Seder from how statements in our Talmud are interpreting the woman's relationship to Korban Pesach. So we're gonna start there. I'm gonna share the screen. Let's hope this goes well. Thanks for sharing sources. Okay, we are here. I am clicking. And Bezrat Hashem, this will work. Yes, okay, we are here. Korban Pesach. So let's start by just looking at some of the psukim. The essential psukim regarding Korban Pesach. And while we look at them, the question I want you to have in the back of your mind, I guess I want two things to be in your mind. One is, not one essential question really, which is, where are women here? And who's involved in the Korban Pesach? Dabru el kol adat Yisrael lemor, be'asor l'chodesh hazeh. Speak to the whole community of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, v'ikhu lahem ish se levet avot se labait, and they should take for themselves, now this is an interesting word, ish, man, person, se, a lamb, levet avot, for a family, but Beit Avot is an interesting word because it's defining the family, you know, as like a basically a patriarchal structure. Okay. Selabait, a lamb for each home or household. It's interesting that we have the doubling there, and we're going to come back to that. Ve'imim at habayit miyot miseh. And if the household doesn't have enough in order to, it sounds like enough people to be able to handle a full lamb, ve'lekachu u'shcheno akarov el beito b'miksat nefashot. And then he would take together from his nearby neighbor, together with the home to eat this lamb according to the number of the people. Ish lefi ochlo tachosu al haseh. Every person, in accordance with what they eat, they're going to be numbered or count to cover eating up the lamb, because we can't have something left over from the Korban Pesach. And this is also, of course, the basis for what we call the chavura, or the eating Pesach in a group. So already some flavor of what we know from Leila Seder is already here. Leila Seder is often going to entail a group. It's something that's happening throughout Adat Yisrael. There's a centerpiece that we don't have right now, though, of the Korban Pesach. And also, and this is also an interesting point, it's home-based. I think one of the reasons last year was interesting when COVID started, Purim wasn't affected. Yamim Noraim were very heavily affected by COVID. I felt in particular a very difficult time of understanding Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We were actually in quarantine for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot in my family. That was very difficult without the community. But Pesach, actually, which we had here in Israel, we had a lockdown in Pesach. Pesach, certainly the Seder, was not so difficult for my family to be under lockdown, because there's something about Pesach, starting from Korban Pesach, that is very household-based, right? Se l'Beit Avot, se l'Bayit. There's a sense in which, starting from even Pesach Mitzrayim, when we put the blood on the mezuzah, on the mashkof, on the lintel, when we put the blood on the doors, that we're establishing the house as almost taking the place of an altar. It's representing an altar for Leila Seder. Now, where does this leave us? Where does this leave us? The Talmud Yerushalmi, with respect to obligation and Korban Pesach. Tani, ha'isha osa Pesach harishon me'atzma, v'hasheni tfela la'achirim. Okay, we learn in Raita, Tanaitic source from the Mishnaic era, a woman can make the first Pesach for herself. What do we mean by that? We mean that a Korban Pesach could be slaughtered just for a woman or just for a group of women, according to this opinion. In other words, that would be the same as saying women are fully obligated in Korban Pesach. You wouldn't have a Pesach Sheni just for a woman, a group of women. You would have it for women with men. Those are the words that partake in Pesach Sheni, but are not obligated to. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ha'isha osa Pesach Sheni la'atzma. In Sarich Lamar Harishon. In fact, a woman acted in Pesach Sheni. Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but I see. Yeah. You froze a couple of times. I don't know what happened, but the last 2-3 minutes you've been coming in and out. I wasn't sure if I was the only one. But
I'm so sorry.
I don't know. Okay.
Let's recap those couple of minutes very quickly and let's move forward. What we've seen so far are two opinions about women's obligation in Korban Pesach. The first opinion is that women are fully obligated in Korban Pesach and can participate but are not obligated to participate in Pesach Sheni. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. The second opinion by Rabbi Yossi is that women are fully obligated in both. The language that the Talmud is using to describe this is whether a Pesach offering would be brought for a woman on her own, i.e. just for a group of women, or if you would need men to be involved. If it could be brought just for a group of women, that's an indicator that women are fully obligated. The third opinion is Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Shimon's. He says, "Hey, shau sa pesach rishon tfeila lacherim, ve'nau sa pesach sheni." He says, women can't even participate in pesach sheni, and pesach rishon for a woman is actually not obligatory. So we have three different opinions. Fully obligatory in pesach rishon, optional in pesach sheni,
you're freezing again.
In both. Optional in Pesach Rishon, not even allowed. Okay.
I don't know, maybe you want to try a different
heard no?
I'm sorry?
I don't. Yeah, this is usually my best internet space. All right, let's try again and hope for the best. If not, I'll try to switch.
I'm not sure if it'll help, but some people say if you turn off your video, sometimes that hurts. It helps the bandwidth.
Okay, sure. Let me figure out. I might have to stop screen sharing to... No, I can stop video. Okay, is that helpful? Can you hear me better now?
Now we'll see. Hopefully it won't freeze, but yeah.
Is that...
No, we don't hear you. Okay.
Go for it. Okay, so back to... okay. You can't hear me?
Right now we can hear you.
Okay, so let's try this again, and let's hope that this works. Otherwise, I'm going to try. I'll try a different computer. So to summarize what we saw so far, we saw three different opinions in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The first is that women are obligated Pesach Rishon, not in Pesach Sheni. The second is that women are obligated in both. The third. Women are not obligated in Pesach Rishon, and that would say
interesting. Okay. Laurie?
Why is Rabbi Meir's women are obligated? You can't hear me? Yeah.
Right. Maybe.
Okay, I'm going to try it from another computer.
Yeah. I do apologize for, I think there's some.
I'm going to try from another computer.
Yeah. For those who are new, I do apologize. This is very rare. I must say this is extremely rare, but it does happen once in a blue moon, and nothing we can do, but hopefully we'll fix this.
Very strongly apologize. I'm making my way to another computer to see if I can get to work better. Okay. Okay. I have entered a new room. And I am turning on a new computer. I need to find the Zoom and see if I can get onto. Okay.
So far, we can hear you.
We've opened Zoom. Okay. Can you tell me the meeting code, please? And I'll put in the code.
I know. I have to send it by email. It's. I mean, you want to know what the password is or the number?
The number is fine.
518.
Yeah.
356.
Mm-hmm.
1136.
Okay. Joining.
You need
and the passcode?
Is winter. The W is capitalized.
Okay. That's what I got wrong. And no, it's still not working. That's because I'm in Hebrew. Okay. And I think I'm in. Yes. Okay.
You have to turn off your other computer so we don't get an echo.
Yeah. So unmuting here, starting the video here. And here. Okay.
I got a big echo. You're now Mutti and Lori, right? I would turn off your other computer totally.
Okay, turn off this one. Hold on. No, you have to hear me. No, I think you're the other one. I'm sorry. I just. Can you hear me now?
No, we got the echo. You have to turn off the other computer, like totally.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Let's hope and pray that this works well, and let's learn some Torah. Okay, thank you for bearing with me, everybody. I very strongly apologize. Okay, we were summarizing. Let's just go straight. So Rabbi Meir is saying, how do we know from his perspective that a woman would be obligated? He says, because it says, Ish se lebeit avot. Ish se lebeit avot. Ve'im ratzu labayit. What is he talking about? Remember, there was a doubling in the verse. It said lebeit avot, and then it said se lebeit avot for a household or for a family, and then it said se labayit. Why did it have to say both beit avot, family, and bayit? He's playing on words. The rabbinic appellation for the wife of the family is the bayit. She's called debeto often. She is in some sub-level forming the household. So what Rabbi Meir is saying is that it's for the family and sela bayit. It's also for the wife. If the wife wants, she can even have it done just for herself. It could be done just for women. What's the rationale of Rabbi Yose thinking that women are obligated in Korban Pesach? Again, it says, Ish se lebeit avot. It says it's for the family, and then it says se labayit. And he reads that as kol shekein labayit. How much more so that it would be for the, he's reading bayit not as household, but as woman. So basically, Rabbi Yose and Rabbi Meir are both doing something similar. Rabbi Yose and Rabbi Meir are both reading the se labayit as an extra phrase that's telling us that women are obligated in bringing the first Pesach. Rabbi Yose thinks it means that women are obligated altogether, also in Pesach Sheni, and Rabbi Meir thinks that Pesach Sheni is something that's an option for a woman. Now, why does Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon think that women are exempt from Korban Pesach? It says Ish. Ish velo Isha. It says Ish, which he takes as meaning not adult, but man, a man and not a woman. Maimakaimin Rabbanan, how do our sages read it? Ish, man meaning an adult, prat lekatan, to exclude a minor. So we learn from this, we've had three opinions. According to two of the three opinions, and this is how we paskin, women are obligated in Korban Pesach. Now, the Talmud Bavli makes a slightly different read for Rabbi Yose. Why does Rabbi Yose say that women are obligated? Because the text says, b'michsat nefeshot, in accordance with the number of people. And he says something very simple. Also a woman. A woman is one of those people who would be eating. She's part of people. A woman is a nefesh. A woman is a person. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yose, a woman is obligated. And here we see the Rambam says, Mitzvah taseh lishchot et ha-pesach b'arba'aseh lechodesh Nisan. It is a positive commandment to sacrifice the Pesach offering on the 14th of Nisan, achar chatzot, after halachic midday. Ve'en shochten ela min ha-kvasim u'min ha-izim bilvad zachar ben shana. This is what we do. We do it from the sheep. We do it from the goats, males, yearlings. Echad ha-ish, echad ha-isha, chayavim b'mitzvah zo. Men or women are fully obligated in this mitzvah. Okay, and it's from women's obligation in Korban Pesach that we learn about matzah and maror. V'achlu et ha-basar b'layla hazeh, or at least for maror, let's one step at a time. V'achlu et ha-basar b'layla hazeh, sli esh u'matzot, amrurim yochluhu. And they eat the meat of the Korban Pesach on this night, Sli Eish, It needs to be fire roasted. Umatzot, with matzot. Amorim yochluhu. It's with matzot on with maror, the bitter greens, that we eat it. Okay. The Talmud tells us, Amarava, matzah bizman hazeh doraita, umaror derabanan. Matzah today is considered to be on a Torah level, and maror is considered to be rabbinic. What does this mean? Maishna maror dichtiv al matzot morim, bizman de'ika pesach, yesh maror, uvizman de'leka pesach, leka maror. Why is maror different from matzah that should be only rabbinic? Because it says, and now they're quoting the pasuk from Pesach Sheni, but it's very similar to the pasuk we just read. It says, al matzot umorim, that we eat the korban Pesach with matzah and maror. When there's a korban Pesach, there's maror. When there's no korban Pesach, there's no maror. Matzah nami aktiv al matzot umorim. So why is matzah working differently? The same pasuk refers to matzah right next to maror. Because matzah, mehadar hadar bekra, Ba'erev tochlu matzot. The pasuk comes back, the Torah comes back to say later on, Ba'erev tochlu matzot, that you will eat matzot at night. And that statement that you should eat matzot at night is in addition to the statement that we eat the Korban Pesach with matzah. What does this mean? When we think about the mitzvah of maror from the Torah, the mitzvah here does not seem to be independent, but rather part and parcel of the Torah mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach. The mitzvah to eat maror independently is rabbinic, and it only exists because we no longer can eat the Korban Pesach. Therefore, and now you can see what it might mean for women, given that women are obligated in Korban Pesach, it would stand to reason that women would also be obligated in Maror, since this rabbinic level mitzvah of Maror is in some level a remembrance of the Maror that was eaten with Korban Pesach. Matzah is different from Maror. Matzah is an independent mitzvah. It stands on its own. Because it stands on its own, it has a different pasuk, and we're going to have to see if there's another derivation for why women should be obligated. In all of these cases, the reason why it's not obvious that women are obligated is because we have that principle that women are, generally speaking, exempted from positive time-bound mitzvot. But we've seen that in the case of the Korban Pesach, whether it's from the language of Sela Bayit, or whether it's from the language of B'michsat Nefashot, women are included in Korban Pesach. That extends to eating maror with the Korban Pesach or to eating maror, which is rabbinic, today. Okay. Now, in terms of the question of matzah, what's important to note is that the Torah repeatedly gives us a mention of matzah right alongside mention of not eating chametz. They're paired mitzvot. Shiv'at yamim se'or lo yimatzev v'atechem, ki kol ochel machmetzet v'nichrata nefesh shahim me'adat Yisrael. For 7 days, se'or, leaven, should not be found in your homes. For whoever eats, and the word here, just notice this because it's going to be important in a little bit, kol, anyone, all who eat this kind of sourdough starter, the leavened or the thing that's made with leaven. We actually say machmetzet means even something with leaven mixed in, with chametz mixed in. V'nichrata hanefesh shahim me'adat Yisrael. That person is subject to penalty of karet. Kol machmetzet lo techelu, anything leavened you shall not eat. V'chomosh v'techem tochlu matzot. Don't eat chametz, eat matzah. And so too in Devarim. Lo tochal alav chametz, Shivat yamim tochal alav matzot. Don't eat chametz, eat matzah. And here it's interesting because here the obligation to eat matzah is connected to the obligation of telling the story. Lechem oni, ki b'chipazon yatzatem eretz Mitzrayim, leman tizkor et yom seitcha eretz Mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha. It's here for remembering, perhaps even mentioning, the day that we left Egypt every day of our lives. So we have related mitzvot. The obligation of eating matzah appears again and again against the con in the context of the obligation, not or the prohibition of eating chametz. And that's going to be important because women, generally speaking, are obligated prohibitions. Here's the Yerushalmi again, talking about women and matzah. Matzatan ma'u, what's the situation with women and eating matzah, or the mitzvah of eating matzah? Amarle says to them, it's chov, it's an obligation. Why? Nemar lo tochal alav chametz. It says that you cannot eat with it, with the korban pesach chametz, the nemar, and it says, shivat yamim tochal alav matzah lechemoni. You have to eat matzah for 7 days. Et shehu bebal tochal chametz, harehu bekum echol matzah. Someone who is subject to the prohibition of eating chametz is also subject to the obligation of eating matzah. V'nashim, harehen beval tochal chametz, and women are subject to the prohibition of eating chametz. Therefore, harehen bekum echol matzah, they're also subject to the obligation of eating matzah. V'hataninan, kol mitzvat aseh shezman gorma, nashim chayavim v'nashim pturot. But wait a minute. We have this idea that women would be exempt from positive time-bound mitzvot. Amar Rav Mana, chomer hu mitzvat aseh shehi ba'a mikoach belo taseh. It's harder, it's more stringent. We don't so quickly exempt women from a positive time-bound mitzvah when it comes alongside a prohibition. So the idea here is that because the prohibition of eating chametz and the obligation of eating matzah are paired, women are obligated in both. Okay. And the Talmud Bavli adds something. And what it adds relates to the word I pointed out in the verse, the word kol, that whoever eats machmetzet is going to be subject to karet. The Talmud Bavli says, haktiv kol. Why do we have the word kol there? Hahu mibayle lerabot etanashim. That word kol is necessary because it tells us clearly that women are included in the prohibition. Why might we question women being included in prohibitions? It's standard for women to be included in prohibitions. We might have thought that things worked exactly the opposite way of what we just saw. We might have thought that women's exemption from matzah, since they're paired, would also lead to an exemption from the prohibition of chametz. In other words, we might have thought, positive time-bound commandment, eating matzah, women exempt. Therefore, when it's paired with the prohibition of eating chametz, women can also eat chametz. No, the word was kol ha'ochel, all who eat machmetzet are subject to karet, and that word all includes women. So to summarize what we've got so far, women are fully obligated in Korban Pesach. Women are obligated in the mitzvah on a rabbinic level nowadays of eating maror, which is really something that's, as it were, descended from the original Torah level mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach, which included maror. And women are fully obligated in eating matzah. And our obligation in eating matzah stands even though matzah is an independent mitzvah. And therefore, we might have thought the women's obligation in Korban Pesach wouldn't be enough because it's an independent Torah level mitzvah, ba'erev tochlu matzot. And the answer is no. The fact that women are obligated in the prohibition of not eating chametz means that women are also obligated in the mitzvah to eat matzah. Now, what that means, by the way, is that women are obligated to eat matzah in all of the mitzvah eatings of matzah at Lela Seder. That means when we first eat matzah, right, at the stage where we say al achilat matzah, women have to eat. When we eat matzah as part of korech, women also have to eat matzah then. And at the end of the Seder, the apikomen, which actually, according to some opinions, is the main fulfillment of the mitzvah of eating matzah, women also at the end of the Seder are obligated to eat from the apikomen. So all three eatings of matzah are fully obligatory on women. So if you were talking, those of you who were here for Rabbi Adler, you were talking about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. And what we're saying is that women are obligated in all three. Okay, and here is Rashi just stating this also. Kishem shenashim b'achilat matzah chova ha'achinami b'maror. Just as women's eating matzah is an obligation, so too Maror. And the Torah says something even more expansive, which we're going to come back to Be'ezrat Hashem in our next shiur. Echad anashim ve'echad nashim chayavim. Men and women are obligated. B'chol mitzvot hanoagot be'ota laila. Kegon matzah maror. And all the mitzvot of that night, such as matzah and maror. Okay, Pesach, matzah, and maror, women are obligated. What about the four cups? So the four cups were obligated. The four cups, actually, if we think about it, each of the four cups has its own mitzvah that it's connected to. And that's what it says in the Gemara. Amarle, arba kase tiknu rabbanan derech chirut. Our sages enacted that we should drink four cups by way of freedom. Free people drink wine joyously. Kol chad v'chad navi be mitzvah. With each and every one of these four cups, we perform a mitzvah. What are the mitzvah? Think for a second. What's the mitzvah of the first cup? Kiddush, right? That's pretty standard. What's the mitzvah of the second cup? Second cup is magid. That's unique to Lila Seder. The third cup? Birkat HaMazon. That's fairly standard. Can you hear me now, or am I freezing again? I'm freezing again?
You're good.
Okay, fine. Thank you. And then the fourth cup is challah, which is also unusual. So we have four cups of wine. Each of them is attached to a different mitzvah. Kiddush and Birkat HaMazon are standard that we make over wine. The unique additions of Lila Seder are the cups over Magid, telling the story, and the cup over Hallel, the second and the fourth cup. Okay, so each of them is attached to a mitzvah. Tanu Rabbanan, Hakol Chayavim Ba'arba Kosot Halalu, Echad Anashim Ve'Echad Nashim. The Gemara tells us there's a braita that simply states, everyone is obligated in these four cups, men and women, and does not elaborate. Later on, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who is one of the early generations of Amoraim, says, provides an explanation for why it should be that women are obligated in the four cups. Nashim chayvot barba kosot alalu shafhena yubeoto anes. This is exactly what we saw when we were talking about Kriyat HaMegillah and we were talking about Hanukkah candles. This too, the drinking of the four cups on Pesach is also a rabbinic level mitzvah, which entails, right, even Kiddush, for example, which is... drinking the four cups, which is a rabbinic level mitzvah, entails an element of publicizing the miracle in each of these cases. How so? We just said, we drink them by way of chirut. We don't just drink the wine attached to the mitzvah. We drink them in a way that demonstrates that we are in the process of becoming free, or that we have become free. We'll talk more about what that way is also Be'ezrat Hashem in our next shiur when we talk about reclining. And in that case, because these are rabbinic level mitzvot where a strong component of them is the miracle, in that case, women are obligated in this mitzvah as well. It's interesting, I'll just point out, it's interesting that they're seen as one united framework. There's some very nice agadic explanations for how the four cups fit together in one frame of ideas, as a side to just being sort of attached to the four major mitzvot of the Seder night. But this idea that the wine is accompanying each mitzvah and that these four sets of wine go together with, as it were, a set of four mitzvot. And women are fully obligated in these. Now, here, Rashi points out that Afhain, and his viewpoint, remember, is not just because women are subject to redemption, but because women help bring it about. And when he says that women help bring it about, he has in mind the Nashim Tzadkaniyot, the righteous women who help bring about redemption from Egypt. Now, the righteous women who helped bring about redemption from Egypt are not just relevant to the four cups. They're actually also relevant to something else on Lila Seder. And this is an answer to a trivia question. Are women represented on Lila Seder? That's a strange kind of trivia question because Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned in the Megillah and not mentioned in the Haggadah, really. Who's represented, not represented? What does this mean? But the truth of the matter is that women are represented according to our traditional sources on the Seder. And it's not by putting an orange on the Seder plate or by putting a Miriam's cup. It's something that's more ancient, and it is Haroset. according to the Talmud, the idea of, according to the Talmud, eating charoset is a mitzvah. And that mitzvah comes from its symbolic value. Rabbi Levi Omer, Zecher L'Tapuach. Rabbi Levi says that the reason that it's a mitzvah is because it reminds us of the apples. We'll come back to the apples. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Zecher L'Tid. Rabbi Yochanan says it reminds us of the mortar, what they used to build. Amar Abai, Hilchach Tzarich L'Kuyei Tzarich L'Smuchei. So you've got to make it sour like sour apples, and you've got to make it thick like mortar. Okay? Now, what does he mean by Zecher L'Tapuach? And here's where the women come in. I think Carol was going to share this. I might have missed that she added. Darash Rav Avira, B'schar Nashim Tzadkaniyah Sheyu Be'oto Ador Nigalu Yisrael Mitzrayim. It's by merit of the righteous women that we were redeemed from Egypt. B'sha'ah Sholchot Lishov Mayim, when they went to draw water from the well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mezamen Lehem Dagim K'tanim B'kadehen, God would give them small fish in their jugs. V'shoavot Mechtze Mayim U'mechtze Dagim, and they would draw out from the well, half of what they draw out would be water, and half would be fish. Uba'ot v'shoftot shtei k'deirot, achat shel chamin v'achat shel dagim. And then they would go and they'd make two bowls, one of warm water and one of fish. U'molichot etzel ba'alein l'saden, they bring it to their husbands in the field. U'marchitzot otan v'sachot otan, and they'd wash them and anoint them. U'machilot otan, and feed them. U'mashkot otan, and give them what to drink. V'nizkakot lahen, ben shvatim. And then, or shvatim, and then they would make themselves available for relations to them. And ben shvatim means between, sort of like between the field and the fence, and the kind of like banks in the field. There was a space to be together that could be, I guess you could say, almost semi-private. And this is based on a pasuk in Tehillim, which starts with im tishkavun, if you would lie down in this space. And then it continues to say, and it continues and it says that the wings of the dove are coated in silver, and their limbs are feathers with gold. Okay? And then they're saying that that's the reward. Kevan shemitabrot ba'ot levatehem. When they become pregnant, they come to their homes. And when the time to give birth would come, then they'd go into the field and give birth under the apple tree. So it took us a long time to get to the apple, but we got to the apple. What is the apple here? Well, tachat ha-tapuach or aticha, under the apple tree, I awakened you or I aroused you, is a line from Shir HaShirim. But the idea seems to be that the women here had a vision. They had a vision for redemption. You don't try to create a future. You don't try to have children if you don't have a sense of the current difficulties at some point being able to be relieved. And the women reached out to their husbands and Hashem helped them. He gave them not just water, but he gave them also fish. He gave them the wherewithal to be able to feed their husbands, to be able to, in effect, seduce their husbands. And then eventually when they came out, they would give birth under the tree, which is also where, it sounds like these trees were also near where they were aroused. It was sort of it was considered to be a reward for them. The gold that they got from Egypt was that kanfei yonah nechpa b'kesef evroteh b'yarkrak charutz. That gold on the feathers is like likened to the gold that they get when they leave Egypt. The women are receiving a reward, and ultimately they're bearing the children. And the apple tree is symbolizing the culmination of this process. And an apple is actually not a bad symbol of that, because you know the fruit of the apple tree, the symbolism of fruit. And childbirth, right? Of something bearing fruit is very strong. And the idea then would be, if you're thinking about charoset, that it becomes a very complex thing to eat at the Seder, because it's simultaneously teat. We're not rejecting that symbolism. It's simultaneously the mortar, the pain of slavery, And at the same time, it's also redemption. It's the Jewish women's view of redemption. In a sense, actually, you could say something very similar about matzah, no? Matzah is simultaneously lechem oni, it's the bread of affliction, and it's also the bread that we eat, the chipazon, when we're leaving Mitzrayim. It's the bread that also represents our redemption. There are these two sides of the story, and the truth is we can say it about the four cups as well. I hope to talk about that more in our next shiur, that there's the sense in which the cups are telling us, are also corresponding to different stages in the story of redemption. But fundamentally, we also have through the charoset and through the very halacha of afhen hayu be'oto anes, we have recognition of women at the Seder. So it's something to think about when eating the charoset. A question that an educator recently posed to me, which I'm fascinated by, was, is there really something, and I don't have an answer to this, I just think it's worth thinking about, is there something inherently female about this approach to pursuing redemption? Are these nashim tzadkaniyot acting in a uniquely female way in terms of what they see, in terms of what their purposes are? Certainly giving birth is going to be something that's uniquely female. The seductive arts, something you could discuss if it's female or not, but that's more about the method. But as the vision is what drives them, is the nature of their righteousness and what they see, is that specifically female or not, is something that we could really ask about. Okay, so coming back to where we are, to where we were, we have afhena yuba otuanes, and afhena yuba otuanes is enough to obligate women in the four cups. And the Tosfot say that if it were not for afhena yuba otuanes, women would be exempt from the four cups, because women are typically exempt from positive time-bound commandments. So we have afhen in the four cups. So far, if we're talking about mitzvahs of the Seder, we're doing pretty well. We have Korban Pesach, we have matzah, we have maror, and we have the four cups. What about extending afhen? For example, why did we need to go to all that trouble explaining how women would be obligated in eating matzah if the principle of afhen hayu be'oto anes applies to women at the Seder? So Tosfot say like this: Gabe matzah yesh makshe. Lama li akesha dechol sheyeshna b'bal tocha chametz yeshna mekum echol matzah. Exactly our question regarding women and matzah. There are those who raise the difficulty. Why did I need to compare the being subject to the prohibition of chametz with being subject to the obligation in matzah? Tepu glemi tam sheina yubel tones. Shouldn't that be enough to establish that women are obligated in eating matzah? And you could say that afhen could only serve to obligate women rabbinically if it were not for that comparison. It's actually really interesting for those of you who were here with learning about Megillah reading. It's really interesting to compare that to some of our discussion Megillah reading, because there we were talking about some who have the theory that afhen hayu be'oto anes obligates women in Megillah, but not in exactly the same way that it obligates men in Megillah. For example, there might be a difference between men being obligated to both read and hear, and women only being obligated to hear. Or men being obligated to read and women being obligated to hear. And that might come from an inability of afhen to go beyond a certain point. So Tosfot are making a similar kind of claim, and they're saying afhen hayu be'oto anes can obligate in a rabbinic law, but it can't obligate in a Torah level law. Rabbeinu Yosef Ish Yerushalayim, here's another view, tirates, he suggested something else. You might have thought specifically that women would be exempt from eating matzah, because we might have thought that this would be a further working of a gzera shava that's known. There's a known comparison drawn in Midrashei Halacha between the first night of Pesach and the first night of Sukkot. They're both on the 15th of the month. And that leads us to compare their halachot. Now, when it comes to women in Sukkah, women are exempt from eating in a Sukkah. It's considered to be a time-bound positive commandment. So one might have said something like this. Well, we know the tutu. We know that the 15th of Tishrei, Sukkot, the first night, and the 15th of Nisan, Pesach, the first night, we know that they get compared halachically. Given that they get compared halachically, and women are exempt from the mitzvah of Sukkah, maybe it would follow that women also should be exempt from the kind of parallel core mitzvah of Lila Seder. Well, it's not really the core mitzvah, the second mitzvah, right? After Korban Pesach, we could say eating matzah. And the answer is no. We have that comparison of not eating chametz and eating matzah. The implication of the second view of Rabbeinu Yosef Ish Yerushalayim is that in fact, Avkena Yuba Oto Anes might be able to obligate women on a Torah level mitzvah. There's another reason to think, he says, that it couldn't. This 2-2 business would mean perhaps that women would be exempted. And then he says, well, that's why we need the Hikish. So the first response in Tosfot is saying, we need the comparison of the prohibition of chametz and the obligation of matzah because afhein isn't good enough here. And the second answer is saying, afhein might have been good enough if it weren't for concerns raised by the Gzeres Shava of Tutu. The Gzeres Shava of Tutu requires a response. Okay, what about Hallel? To finish up some of the, just for tonight, what about Hallel and Lila Seder? Now we say, in every generation, we have to see ourselves as leaving Egypt. Those are the words in the Mishnah. Shenemar, v'gadtala v'incha v'yomu le'mor b'avur ze'a sashem li b'tzeitim mi'mitzrayim. I'm doing this on account of what God did for me when I left Egypt. What do we have to do therefore? Lefichach, therefore, anachnu chayavin lehodot lehallel l'shabech l'fe'er l'romem l'ader l'varech l'alel kalitz. Therefore, we have to give praise to God. And there are a lot of terms here for giving praise to God. What's the idea? If I've just left Egypt, here on Lila Seder, I'm leaving Egypt. That's how I see myself. What's the natural next thing that I need to do? The natural next thing that I need to do is exactly the natural next thing that Am Yisrael needed to do when they left Egypt. What did they do as soon as they left Egypt and they were officially redeemed? They break out in praise of God. They say hello. So if I'm really experiencing this on Lila Seder, then I too, it would seem, should say hello. And we say that the cups of the Seder are organized. We said that the fourth cup is with Hallel. And the truth is the second cup of Magid, I didn't bring it from the Mishnah because it's a little complicated in the Mishnah. There's a Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. We say the beginning of Hallel actually as part of Magid over the second cup. We break up Hallel. Why? It might correspond to the idea that we would actually have Hallel going on both when we shechted the Korban Pesach and also when we ate the Korban Pesach. We don't eat the Korban Pesach anymore. But to have that sense of Hallel going on through the duration of the experience of Lila Seder, we break up Hallel, and there's a little bit before, during Magid, before we eat our meal, and before we eat the Korech, before we eat the matzah and the maror that symbolize the Korban Pesach, what we have left of it. And there's the halal that goes on right afterwards, right before, right afterwards, or not right afterwards, a little afterwards, right before and afterwards. We've got halal. And that halal, it's almost as though the halal is carrying us through the whole night. That works actually very nicely with the idea that Rabbi Jay was saying, Rabbi Adler said, with holding the cup the whole time also. Meaning there's a sense of real total continuity in how we're praising God. Now, where are women in this? Tosfot, Mashmakan, they're talking about Sukkot. They're saying on Sukkot, it sounds like, De'isha p'tura mihalal de'sukot, that a woman should be obligated from the halal. It's positive, it's time-bound. V'chein da'tzeret, v'tama de'mitzvat aseshas mangramahi. Okay. So they say, look, on Sukkot, on Shavuot, women are exempt from halal, or at least that's how it sounds like, because it's a positive time-bound commandment. Afal gav de bahalal de lele psachim, mashma meperek arve psachim, de mechayvi, bedalid kosot. Even though with halal of lel pesach, it's a little different, because it sounds like from perek arve psachim that women are obligated in the four cups. That's what we saw before. Umistama lo tiknu dalid kosot, ela kedei lomar alehem halal vagada. And the enactment of the four cups, right? The Kiddush and the Birkat HaMazon, they're a given. But the special idea of four cups as a unit is created through saying over the four cups, Hallel and Magid, Hallel and Haggadah. And of course, like we just said, Maggid includes words of Hallel. Therefore, if women are obligated in the four cups, and the four cups are intrinsically connected in their very enactment to reciting Hallel, it must be that women are obligated in Hallel at Leil HaSeder. Shani Hallel, and Hallel is different from Hallel on Sukkos and on Shavuot, on Leil HaSeder de Ala Nespa, because it's from, we talked about this previously, it's from that miracle track of Hallel. There's Hallel that's said because it's an appointed time, and there's Hallel that's said on account of a miracle. And the Hallel that we sell, say, on Leil HaSeder, it's considered to be a form of Shira. It's a different level of Hallel. It's not the same as the Hallel that's said, generally speaking, on a festival morning. It's a Hallel on the miracle track. And women, of Hena Yubotones, women are part of that miracle. So the Tosfot say, given that women are obligated in the four cups, and given that women are included in the four cups, we said it's Avhena Yubotones, therefore, Hallel, which is inherently connected to the miracle on the Seder night, and is inherently connected, the four cups are connected to Hallel, is also something in which women are obligated. Okay, let me stop the screen share now, and let's look at some of the chats. What I want to do next time is I want to pick this up and talk about what's left over. The two things that are left over are reclining and Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim in particular. Okay, so that's going to be our focus next time. And the law of reclining is of particular interest, I think you'll see, in terms of how it talks about changing assessments of women and the role of women specifically on Seder night. Okay, so let's go ahead. I'm sorry that we had so much technical difficulty. Okay, Noah Weinberger writes, I just learned in Pesachim a few weeks ago that a woman can pick where she eats the korban, either with her husband or with her father. Okay, Noah Weinberger, I see that you're learning Daf Yomi. So it's actually a really interesting discussion, which has to do with, let's say you have a newlywed couple. It would be assumed typically that the first set, the woman would go to her parents, and that would be taken as a given. But after that, less so. And there's a question about it, because generally speaking, when it comes to eating Korban Pesach, we have to establish who are the menuyim, who has been appointed for or assigned to be part of eating a given specific animal that's being sacrificed as Korban Pesach. So that's where that discussion comes up. Is it assumed that a woman is always going to be with her husband, or are there cases where we might assume that she's going to be with her father? It gets into kind of like interesting questions about the shift of, in that era, a woman really went straight from Beit Avia to Beit Baala. She went straight from being in her father's home to being in her husband's home. Nowadays, oftentimes, there's a middle ground. And of course, what was interesting, I think, what we saw in the Talmud Yerushalmi in particular, but not only, was the phrase they kept using about the Pesach La'atzman, a woman could have Pesach for herself. Of course, you know, there are women who are independent in different contexts. And part of that, part of a situation in which perhaps there would be a group of women might have been women who were perhaps unattached. Perhaps they weren't living in their father's home, a widow, a divorcee, something of the sort.
I would have assumed that Sheva Brachos would have taken precedence, and a newlywed would have to go with the husband if Pesach was right before the wedding.
That's a whole other discussion, Sheva Brachot. Sheva Brachot is a time where what Sheva Brachot is about is that fundamentally, actually, it's as though it's taking place in the domain of the husband and wife the entire time. That's really kind of a separate.
Just double checking.
No, it's interesting. Okay. Getting back on track here. So there's that discussion, but the truth of the matter is that discussion in and of itself doesn't resolve whether a woman is obligated in Korban Pesach. Meaning a woman could have an optional eating of Korban Pesach and be counted and be appointed, but that wouldn't necessarily tell us that a woman would be obligated to eat Korban Pesach in general. So that's why that discussion of who can we assume a woman is appointed here or there doesn't resolve the whole topic. Okay, we have to assume many women were either impure or unable to travel. Yeah, I mean, especially when nida, menstruating, would have meant that a woman wouldn't have been able to have the Korban Pesach. Unfortunately, generally speaking, exactly a month later would mean that it would be tough for a woman who missed Korban Pesach to have Pesach Sheni as well, right? If she's regular. So there it's actually fortunate that we saw Rambam holds by the viewpoint that women are obligated in the first, but the second is optional for women and not obligatory. Okay, I'm sorry that it kept freezing. Let's move beyond the technical discussion. Okay. If a woman is not obligated for the Korban, is she still obligated for being in Jerusalem on or for the Chag? If she wouldn't have been, I don't think she would be, but she is. So it's sort of like, I don't know what else, let's say on Aliyah LaRegel, a woman is generally speaking not obligated in Aliyah LaRegel. But if a woman is partaking in the sacrifice, even if she's not obligated in it, then she needs to eat the sacrifice with the group. Ellen already put in that women are not obligated in Aliyah LaRegel. Hello. Are women obligated to the same measurements of eating matzah and maror as men? Please do not say yes. Sorry. Obligation is obligation here. It's the same measurements. Now, what those measurements are is a whole other discussion. But yeah, there's not a discount. Whatever the measurement is, women have to eat as well. Here we go. You guys start getting into how much a kazayit really is. This is a big discussion. Miriam and the women bring musical instruments. Yeah, it's part of that same vision, right? How did they know to bring the musical instruments with them out of Egypt? They had this sense that there was going to be a future, right? They had that, they had a different level of confidence. Yocheved, Bat Paroh, Shifra, Pua are certainly heroines of the Pesach story. I always found that interesting with Nashim Tzadkaniyot Midrashim, that the Midrashim could have just said that. Right? They could have just said, well, at Bat Paroh, they might not have singled out as being a reason why B'nai Israel merited redemption. But Yocheved, Miriam, Shifra and Pua, if they're different people, or Yocheved and Miriam just on their own, if Shifra and Pua are not distinct people, that those are already two Nashim Tzadkaniyot, if not four. And why would that not be sufficient? And I think the real idea, or part of what that Midrash is telling us, and that's part of what Rashi is telling us here, and part of the Charoset discussion is saying is it wasn't just these isolated heroic women. So these particular women had uniquely central roles to play in Moshe's narrative. But when it came to bringing about redemption, there was something that across the board, the Jewish women were seeing and were pursuing. I think there's a concerted effort to make it clear that, as it were, Yocheved and Miriam didn't come out from a vacuum. Even though I know there's also the Midrash that says that Amram and Yocheved had given up and Miriam uniquely encouraged Yocheved. I'm not trying to make Yocheved look bad. But I think the idea is that there was an overall environment among the women. And that's what we keep seeing, right? When they say ki chayoteina, these women really keep giving birth. They do. That's right. They keep giving birth. Despite everything, they keep giving birth. And I think the Midrash is really trying to highlight that it's across the board for Jewish women. And Yocheved and Miriam are examples of a broader phenomenon. And they're not the only ones. If it were not for women, we would not have left Egypt. I forgot what that said. So that's exactly what we saw. That's the statement. Bizchut Nashim Tzadkaniyot. It's by merit of these women that we're redeemed. The idea being that something about, there's something about our own actions that can also help bring about redemption. Halal Mitzrayim was written well after the time of David. So reciting Halal in this context is just from the rabbis. So in general, there's a machloket about if Halal is Doraita or Drabanan. And even if we say it's on a Torah level, is the specific text Doraita Drabanan? And the Talmud actually also discusses the specific texts and who said them first. So you're right. There's a lot to discuss here about halal and where it comes from. I have heard that Ashkenazi women who marry Sfaradim must wait until the second year to eat kitniyot. Wow. I never heard that, but that's fascinating. And I'm assuming, Susan, that you're bringing that up in the context of that Korban Pesach discussion, that it sort of would harken back to that.
Yes, we had a Ashkenazi person from our family marry into a Persian family, actually. Mm-hmm. And they said that it had to be after the first year, even though they went to the parents, they went to the Persian parents for Pesach.
Yeah, so I've never heard that, but it's that is fascinating. Derech Nashim is a rationale for Pesach Sheni. It could be, but it doesn't always work out. The main example given in the Gemara with Pesach Sheni has to do with people who were tmeimit, who were ritually impure from dealing with the dead at the time of the first Pesach. So that it doesn't lead actually by talking about women's ritual impurity per se. If the woman is a farmer, owner of the land, Shavuot and Bikurim, Aliyah L'Regel. Okay, so Aliyah L'Regel, no. Bikurim, so women are obligated in Havaat Bikurim, in bringing the Bikurim. Women are exempt from Mikra Bikurim, from the statement that said alongside bringing Bikurim. It's a law in the Mishnah, because Mikra Bikurim includes a phrase talking about the land that God has given us personally, and the original allotment of the land is not to women. But a woman can, in some cases, own her own land, which is bearing fruit that is subject to Bikurim, in which case she brings, or she can have her husband bring on her behalf. But it's still effectively her mitzvah that he, in that case, would be helping her to fulfill. Okay, so again, to summarize, I mean, we got through a lot of mitzvahs tonight from Lila Seder, Korban Pesach, Matzah, Maror. And when we say matzah, we mean also korech, and we mean also afikoman, which is not just a cute thing, but actually is very much part of the mitzvah, right? And the four cups, and halal. Women are in 100%. Okay, so that's a lot for women at the Seder. Bezrat Hashem, we're gonna complete the picture next week. And if anyone asks you, well, where are women represented in the Seder? On some level, the whole redemption. It's connected to our whole people, and women play a special role. And we also have a symbol of that in right there in the Charoset. So it's one of these things you can bring up. Tov. Thank you very, very much. I look forward to picking this up next.